y'all. Thanks for listening to Killer Queens.
Or KQ if you're nasty.
Welcome to the show where two 90s-loving country chicks gab about true crime and tell each other to talk to the hand because the face ain't listening. I'm Torella.
And I'm Tori.
And we're sisters who have always loved true crime and decided to turn that obsession into a show with a light take on the topic.
Kind of like diet true crime, it's all the flavor and fewer calories.
Now with our show, you'll get true crime, 90s nostalgia, and a few four-letter words sprinkled in.
Because I always say that Polly Pockets and true crime go together like peas and carrots.
Be sure to check out our case submission form on our website at killerqueenspodcast.com and follow us on social media and YouTube.
Now grab your Surge, your 3D Cool Ranch Doritos, and your kitten surprise, and let's get into the episode.
This episode contains discussion of sexual assault, domestic violence, child abuse, child death, and drug use. Listener discretion is advised.
In 2008, 39-year-old Melissa Lucio became the first Hispanic woman sentenced to death in the state of Texas. She's been tried and convicted of capital murder in the death of her 2-year-old daughter, Mariah Alvarez. On February 17, 2007, first responders were called to Melissa's home to find Mariah in cardiac arrest. Despite resuscitation efforts, Mariah was pronounced dead at the hospital. She was covered in bruises, with the cause of death ultimately determined to be from a significant head injury. Melissa had no documented history of abuse, but before investigators had even left her house that night, they'd formed their opinion of what happened despite Melissa's explanation. Since her sentencing, people across the world have been lobbying on Melissa's behalf, petitioning for a stay of execution and hopefully for a full exoneration. Was Melissa wrongfully convicted and sentenced to death, or was she responsible for the death of her youngest child?
Hey, you guys, welcome to Killer Queens. If you've never been here before, we want to give you just a little information about how the show is set up and what it's meant to accomplish. If you have been here before, welcome back. You can just use that handy skip ahead feature here if you want to.
We want to give a message to friends and family of the victims. We know that there may be someone involved in the case who might listen one day, and we want you to know that our intention is to only bring awareness to this case. And while we do use personal stories in some instances and our own humor in order to tell the story in a way that listeners can relate, we have the utmost respect for victims and their families.
We created Killer Queens to be a place where we can have open discussions about cases just like you would with friends. We are not investigators. We use information that is available to the public, such as documentaries, case files, and media coverage. Using this information, we intend to tell the story of what happened in each case that we cover. Now, will you agree with our interpretations or conclusions of each case? Well, heck no.
Mm-mm. We each approach cases from different perspectives, life experiences, and beliefs that we already have in place. And sometimes these differences are slight, yet they can be wide enough to cause divide and upset some of those listening. We do our best to present the facts as we find them in our research, but we do bring our own perspectives to the case. We understand that you will too. We want you to know that this is a safe space to discuss differences and opinions in a civilized manner. Our style may not be your personal preference, and if that's the case, we know you'll be able to find one of the many other shows out there to tell the story the way you want to hear it. We can be grown-ups about it if you can.
Now, if we are your cup of tea and you want even more KQ, you can join our Patreon and get access to our entire catalog of episodes ad-free and access to bonus episodes too. And I'll give you just a little hint if you're an ad skipper, but you still want the deals that we have from our sponsors each week, you can scroll down to the show notes and see what coupons we have available for you right down there.
But you didn't hear it from us.
That's a pro tip, but I'll deny ever sharing it.
Right. So all that being said, let's get into the story.
All right. So this is, I was going to say a part two-er, a two-parter. But this is the second part of the two-parter.
Yes.
Therefore,
this is the two-er, not the one-er.
Exactly. So therefore and forthwith, if you have not listened or watched part one, you might want to go back there just to get the context and all the stuff. Because now we're going to dive into the trial and her post-conviction processes and where she is with all of that and what has happened. So part one is probably helpful.
I would say so. Yeah. Unless you like being completely, I don't want to say lost, but just maybe a little confused. Or,
well, I'll tell you what, unless you're like Harry and When Harry Met Sally, because he always reads the last page of every book, because what if he dies before he finishes it? you know?
That's deep. Yes.
So if you're pulling a Harry, then maybe, you know, whatever.
Yes. I don't like the phrase pulling a Harry.
Ew, yeah. I don't like that either. Yeah. Ugh. Also, we want to give a hey girl thanks to Alicia Marie Collins, Emily, and Kelsey Panza for requesting this case.
Thank you. And thank you to Madison for writing it up.
Thank you. All right. So we're going to jump back into the trial. Harlingen Police Department Detective Rebecca Cruz was one of the investigators who took the stand. Cruz said that she'd attended Mariah's autopsy and also contacted CPS to determine if there had been any allegations of abuse from Melissa's children in the past. Cruz said that on the night of Mariah's death, three of the younger children were taken to a local children's advocacy center to be interviewed. She also said that two older children, so Alexandra and Daniela, were taken to the police station to make statements. Cruz said she never received a copy of the older children's interviews and that the three younger children did not make any allegations of abuse from Melissa. It was also reported that Renee, one of the younger children, told police that she saw Mariah fall down the steps 2 days prior, but this was not brought up at trial at all.
Because if you recall from part one, we found out that Gilman, her attorney, good for nothing.
Good for nothing. Yeah, exactly. Why would you not? Because it's not like we've got somebody being like, well, I mean, mom told me she fell down the stairs. Nobody actually saw her fall down the stairs, but she told me and oh, he told me. And, you know, you've got people who could be like, well, I heard secondhand that she fell down the stairs. We have witnesses.
Well, yeah, and Gilman had something to work with here. He had something to work with, yet he kept his mouth completely shut throughout the entire, and we'll get into it. I'm trying really hard to not get ahead of ourselves here.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and it'd be one thing if, like, all of the children were, like, 6 or 7 years old or really young, but some of these are teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
They can testify about what they've seen, you know, especially if they witness the fall. And many people witness the fall in her family, one person.
According to reports of that day that the fall happened, all of the kids that were there at the house, I don't know if any were not there, but all the other kids except for Alexandra and Mariah were outside playing.
Mm-hmm.
It was just Melissa, Alexandra, and Mariah in the house. And then Mariah made her way out somehow, and that's when it happened. So you would think what it's got to be 9 kids out there that potentially saw it happen.
Right. Exactly. And we're not even going to
consider, or 10 kids out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Consider bringing any of these children up onto the stand.
Right.
So Cruz told the court that she'd been called to investigate the case due to inconsistencies with Melissa's story about Mariah's death and her injuries. She said that with a search warrant, she looked through the residence for anything that might indicate abuse, but there was nothing found. She was also quoted as saying, quote, "This child didn't die from natural causes. This child was killed. Melissa Lucio caused the death of this child."
Okay, well, that's speculation.
But based on what evidence? Yeah, exactly. Like, because of the evidence you found of abuse at her home? Oh, you didn't find that? Like,
you're just drawing assumptions now. Like, that's not, there is no evidence that that happened. There's no proof. For people to be able to speak as if it's fact with no evidence to back it up should not be allowed in court. Mm-hmm. And her attorney, yes,
exactly,
should have caught that shit and said, objection, speculation.
Yeah, definitely. Because you're right. Yeah, you don't know. Nothing that you have concretely says that this person caused her death. There's nothing to even say that Melissa was out there with her when she fell. But I guess they're saying that the fall didn't happen at all. But yeah, it's so frustrating. The emergency room physician, Dr. Alfredo Vargas, who treated Mariah on the night of her death, also testified to her condition. He said that Mariah was dehydrated in addition to the significant amount of bruising on her. Dr. Vargas had spoken to a police officer about the scene and what had happened before he performed his exam. So several first responders who'd been on scene at Melissa's home that night told the court about how strange they found her behavior to be. They said that she didn't seem to be upset. She wasn't trying to touch or hold Mariah. And that was a really big red flag to them. And they said that they just did not think that she was acting like a mother should act in that situation.
Now, if you want to hear us go off about how one should act in any given situation, part one's where it's at if you haven't watched it. I cannot say this enough. We're not your real mom. We never will be. We're not going to tell you to go listen to it or watch it. But if you do want to hear it, that would be a good place to start. But I'm not going to go off on that for the same length of time that we did the first episode. However, how are you supposed to act? Mm-hmm. How are you supposed to react?
Mm-hmm. There are also like situations. I always think about when we have this particular situation, which actually comes up quite often, yeah, because somebody involved in an investigation is going to try to use somebody's inappropriate response or behavior or demeanor or whatever as evidence. It happens a lot. But one thing that I think about is if I have to open a gift that someone has given me in front of them,
mm-hmm,
I am the worst about that. If you give me a gift and I have to open it in front of you, I don't act like I hate it. Like I'm not like, what is this bullshit or anything like that. But I feel so much pressure if somebody's watching me open a gift that I'll be like, oh, thanks. That's so nice. And like, I'll smile and like, whatever. But like, I just feel so much pressure, even if I adore what this gift is, right? I've been wanting it for 20 years. It's all I've ever wanted. I'm just like, okay, thank you. Like, could you look away? Don't look at me. Like, it's just weird. I don't like when Andrew and I, whatever presents we get each other, he used to be like, let's do them at the family thing. And I'm like, no, I don't want everybody looking at me. It just makes me feel weird. And then I feel like I'm going to respond in a way that you're going to think that I hated it and I'll feel rude. I just don't want everybody watching me.
Well, yeah, I mean, some people just don't. When you feel like you're on the spot or people are watching and taking note of how you're acting in any given moment, some people either, I mean, I know of some people who they tune it out and they can just do it. And, you know, they just do it without thinking. But some people, and it's not, it might not even be a conscious thing where Melissa was like, everybody's watching me and I don't know how to act. Mm-hmm.
It might just be an uncomfortable, I'm in a state of distress.
Well, and given her history of trauma and abuse,
mm-hmm,
there is no wrong or right way to react.
No. Would you look at like a person, a victim, survivor, however you want to look at this? What's coming to my mind right now is Jan.
Brady.
I don't remember her last name.
When she got her haircut.
Exactly.
No,
Jan. Gosh, I don't remember her last name from Abducted in Plain Sight.
Oh, sure.
And when Bob would abduct her and take her places and when he had her during that time and he would rape her, she said she would look up because they were in that motor
camper
van. Yeah, camper. And they had like a little like window up the top or whatever. She would look up and focus on like the trees and the leaves,
the clouds and stuff.
And yeah, she sure would and pretend like it's not happening. Right. I'm just, I'm not here. I have left my body. Mm-hmm. I'm not here anymore. So like, would you accuse somebody going through something like that, you know, and be like, oh, well, then you must have not been upset about it. You must have been fine with it.
Right.
But no, we do all sorts of things. Our body does all sorts of things and our brain does all sorts of things to protect us from situations.
And we have no control over that.
No, no. And Madison, who wrote this episode, is an EMT or a paramedic. I know that there's a difference and I forget them. Yeah, I'm so sorry. One or both. I don't know. She's something pretty
whichever cool is the right one is the one that Torella actually said. You just misheard her.
That's it. Yep. Thanks.
You're welcome.
So she said, as someone who's been on scenes like this, parents, family members, they all act differently. Some are screaming at us to help their child. Some are sitting on the couch in disbelief. Some are running around trying to do normal things like make sure the trash is taken out or cleaning up. I mean, that's all manner of things, right? Just like when a child goes missing, there's no right way to act. And it seems like the judgment of things like this is always made by people who have never had to go through anything like that. Yeah, like mic drop. Okay, so you're telling me that I acted the wrong way when my daughter passed away unexpectedly. How did you act when your child passed away unexpectedly?
I'll wait.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I'll wait.
Yeah. You don't get to tell me what's the right way to act.
No.
I mean,
it's not fair. And like I said before, I think that it's mothers, statistically speaking, get a lot more shit for this than fathers do, because fathers can be stoic and it's like, oh, they're just strong, silent, and kind of trying to hold it together. Or if they're weeping, oh, then he's so in touch with his emotions and feelings. Like, and I know that, you know, across the board, there have been different instances of probably both of those where somebody said, that's weird, that's weird, that's weird. But generally speaking, women get the brunt of that. Mothers get the brunt of that. So,
And I guarantee you, if this had turned out differently and Melissa had been crying and screaming and begging to let her touch Mariah and trying to hold her, if she had done all those things, this same investigator would say, well, I could tell she was putting on an act.
Yeah.
She was overly upset and it was obvious that she was just acting.
You're damned if you do and damned if you don't. I mean, there's just, 100%. And that goes back to, there is no wrong or right way to, like, shrinks my house, what it does.
Yeah. A Texas Ranger even testified that he could tell Melissa was guilty by her body language and reactions while interrogating her.
So guess what? There is a reason why polygraphs are not admissible in court. Because they don't hold up. They're not accurate.
They're not accurate.
You using your eyeballs giving an ocular pat down. That's not accurate either. Oh, I could look at him and tell that he was guilty. Well, that's
exactly.
You know. Sure. Where's the evidence though? So.
Yeah, exactly. Where's the evidence? Like, there are things that, you know, sometimes you can say, oh, well,
that made the hair on the back of my neck stand up.
Normally, when somebody's doing something, oh yeah, or like normally, if somebody, like, they won't look you in the eye, sometimes that means that they're lying, but sometimes that means that they're scared to look you in the eye because they don't look anybody in the eye.
Yeah,
I am weird about looking people in the eye. You made a comment one time that it made you so uncomfortable that I wouldn't look somebody in the eye one time when they were talking to us. I'm like, I mean, if you're talking to me and I don't, like, know you super, super well, I'm like, eyes, boom. Like, I'm everywhere else. I will not look you in the eye. And it's like a inferiority thing. Like, I'm like, I shouldn't be talking to this person. They're not going to want to hear what I have to say. Like, I don't know. I'm just, there's a lot that goes into that. But
I'm sure, I don't know. I think you're pretty shifty, but I think I'm somewhere down the middle. Like, I will look somebody in the eye and then I will, you know, I hope it's natural. I don't know. But if somebody's like, then we're in a staring contest, that makes me very uncomfortable.
I don't like that at all. Yeah. But like this idea that there are, you know, so I've heard some investigators call either themselves or colleagues like human lie detectors. We're like, oh yeah, you bring him in and he's the one who just knows, he can tell if somebody's lying. Like, there's no way that you can take that same person, that human lie detector. Has anybody ever got one over on him? Did anybody ever call out and say they were sick when they were really just hungover? Did anybody ever, you know, anything? Because people tell you lies all the time and you didn't fucking know it. You didn't know it every time. If that's the case, then your kids never snuck out of the house. They never smoked a cigarette behind your back. They, you know, like, fuck off. You're not a human lie detector.
And also, lie detectors don't count. So,
exactly. Exactly. You don't even count here. Yeah. Also, reportedly, this ranger had not even been at the scene. He wasn't even there. He really is the definition of you don't go here. He was not even there.
You cannot make it up.
And also, before he talked to Melissa, he was told by Detective Cruz that a toddler was dead due to a significant beating. Where did they get that information?
Does he have a biased opinion before?
Exactly. He was also shown the extremely graphic photos of Mariah's body. Armed with this information and an unavoidable bias, he went in to begin her interrogation. And the ranger said that he could tell by Melissa's slouched position that she'd given up and that she was responsible for Mariah's death, because apparently a slouch means you have murdered somebody. Every time. Like, do you ever like walk by somebody and they're like, they're slouched or whatever? They've murdered somebody. Run away from them. They don't just need to straighten up. They've murdered somebody. So yeah. Just in
well,
case you didn't
they
need to
straighten up in more ways than one, right?
Exactly. He explained that he believed that someone who was truly innocent would have gotten upset, would have told the detectives to get out of their face and that they wanted their attorney. What a fucking double standard right there. Because if she had said she wanted her attorney, they would have said, look how guilty she is. She lawyered up immediately.
If she would have gotten...
Now he's saying...
Well, she would have gotten aggressive and said, get out of my face.
Yeah. They would have been like, she wasn't, she was,
uncooperative. She was.
Yes. Uncooperative and yeah, aggressive toward a police officer. So obviously she's violent. She's aggressive. She's, if she's in your face and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh. So now here's another one to add to your, oh, I didn't know that. Okay. If somebody is slouching, they've just murdered somebody. So get away right. from them. And number two is if somebody doesn't tell the police to get out of their face when they're being questioned, that's how you can tell they're innocent. If they're like, get out of my face. I need my attorney. Absolutely not, sir. Absolutely not. He said that the goal of his interrogation was to get Melissa, quote, to take responsibility for what she did and explain everything she did, how she hit this little girl and how she grabbed this little girl. Dr. Farley, the chief forensic pathologist, also took the stand. She showed photos of Mariah's body, describing her as, quote, severely abused. She pointed out marks on Mariah's back and left arm that she described as bite marks. There was no DNA testing done to determine if Melissa's DNA was found in the, quote, bite marks. Farley also testified that the bruises on Mariah were, quote, consistent with somebody being hit or being slammed into something.
And remember what the phrase consistent with means.
Yes. Yeah.
That does not mean that's exactly what happened.
It means could be explained by. Could be. Yeah. Farley spoke about the untreated broken arm, saying that it would have happened within the past 7 days to 2 weeks prior to Mariah's death. I think I accidentally misquoted last time and said 2 to 7 weeks. It was 2 days. I'm sorry, 7 days to 2 weeks. So my bad. She also said that the fracture was from tugging or twisting specifically, which I'm not a doctor. I don't know if you can look at a fracture and say, that fracture was a tug or a twist rather than I fell out of a tree or I fell off my bike or.
Well, and I wonder if this was a consistent with as well, because that seems to be such this 100% was a tug or a twist. Like,
yes. I wish we knew more about the broken arm situation. Like, yeah, because how. Now, I know that like something that will commonly happen with children's arms or elbows or whatever, if you go to grab them and twist, you can like pull their elbow out of place a little bit or pull their arm out of socket kind of thing. But we're talking about a fracture. So like where on her arm was the fracture? And is that in the bone? I mean, how can you tell if something was done by twisting or tugging versus a fall? Like,
yeah, I don't know.
You know? Any like doctors or orthopedic or whoever knows out there, let us know. But I'm just not sure how you can tell the difference between the two.
Right.
She also said that Mariah would have definitely been complaining of pain to the arm because nobody in the family said that they knew that Mariah's arm was broken. Obviously, Melissa didn't know that, or she would have taken her to the doctor, according to her.
Yeah.
She didn't take her to the doctor. We have got a friend who's got a daughter who has broken her limbs about 47 times already. She's just a daredevil and a half, and she'll do whatever. But she had a broken limb, I forget which, that they did not realize was broken at first. Like, I believe she had was climbing a tree and fell down, so I think it was her arm.
Mm-hmm.
And her arm hurt and everything, but they did not initially think it was broken. And right. She went in, I don't remember how many days later, I cannot remember all the specifics. But when they brought her in, they were like, her arm's broken. And she's like, neither one of them realized it.
Right.
I don't know. I had a broken toe for 6 weeks.
You didn't know it.
I didn't know it.
I mean, people's pain thresholds are so different. It just depends. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, she falls down a lot. I don't know. I don't, you know, we can't know. And we don't know enough about the broken arm to even.
I wish we knew more about this because it's like, I mean, there are things, you know, that you would think would happen with a broken bone that would very clearly indicate that it's broken. Like, you know, in some
swelling,
of those, like,
bruising.
Yeah, swelling, things are not pointed the right way. Like,
but that's a severe
like that.
Break.
Exactly. So if you have something that's like a hairline fracture and you don't have a lot of swelling and you have a 2-year-old going, oh, my arm hurts, you know, ow, or whatever. Kids hurt themselves 70 times a day. Like, if I took my kids to the doctor every time they said one thing hurt, I'd live at the doctor's office.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just so, I don't know. Like you said, I wish we knew more about that. If her arm truly was broken for that long, that is concerning. But again, if it's a hairline fracture that did not produce a lot of the symptoms.
They also definitely, and I don't know if the fall was the cause of the brain injury that caused her death. I don't know. But let's say it was. When the autopsy happened, they said that it had to have happened within the last 24 hours, right? Well, that fall happened days before that. So can we trust that it was 7 days to 2 weeks prior? Because we're skewed on the timelines
yes.
of when things happened.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. There's just a lot of
question marks.
Yeah, nuance. And yeah, for sure. Not only all those things, she continued to elaborate on how Mariah's injuries could not have come from a fall down the stairs, that they had to have come from chronic abuse over time. The defense called a neurosurgeon to the stand who testified that he did agree with Dr. Farley that Mariah's cause of death was blunt force trauma to the head, but that the trauma could have been a result of falling down the stairs. He did not speak to her other injuries as he did not have expertise on those. He's just, you know, not just a neurosurgeon, like don't, not like that, but that's his area of expertise. He's not going to talk about the arm. He's not going to talk about those other things. But where Dr. Farley is saying that could not have happened from the fall down the stairs, he's saying, well, yeah, it could. It absolutely could. Sonia Chavez, Melissa's sister, testified that she'd never seen her sister act aggressively with her children. She said that after Mariah was returned to Melissa's custody, she had never seen any signs of abuse. The defense attempted to call Norma Villanueva, a social worker, to testify about the abuse that Melissa had suffered in her childhood and young adulthood, but it was determined that she, quote, was not qualified to offer her testimony.
That's convenient, isn't it?
Very convenient. Why? What makes her not qualified? This is the work that she does for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the state trusts her to do the job, but they don't trust her to testify on it.
Apparently not.
They also attempted to call a psychologist to the stand, Dr. John Pinkerman. He'd explained that Melissa had a history of abuse and inadequate men in her life, exploiting her and then leaving. And he reiterated what Melissa's family once said, that she found a purpose in being a mother. Dr. Pinkerman asserted that because of Melissa's past, her mental state was that men in her life did no wrong. She was to take the blame for the things that went wrong. And he also explained that he didn't think that Melissa met the criteria for women who kill children. She didn't have a severe mental illness. There was no apparent motive for retaliation, no history of violence against her children. It just didn't fit with the nature of the crime. But Dr. Pinkerman's testimony was not included in this trial.
It's so sad because Melissa didn't have a chance. She did
absolutely not.
Did not have a chance.
Mm-mm.
It seems like at this point, the trial is just like the prosecution having a talent show. You know what I mean? They're like, look what we can do. And
yeah,
it's all for show because there was no way Melissa was going to win. There was no way.
It wasn't even a fight. Like, a trial is supposed to be an adversarial process. Yes. And if you've got the prosecution,
innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah. And if you've got the prosecution bringing up all the experts, and sometimes the defense doesn't even have any experts, but this time they did have people that they could call, and the prosecution is just knocking them down. Nope, not bringing that in.
Like, I'm honestly surprised that Gilman even attempted to do as much as he did, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, at least let them make the decision with all the information.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Make it fair, at least. Like, it's just, ooh. After deliberation, the jury returned with a verdict. Melissa Lucio was guilty of the capital murder of Mariah Alvarez. The sentencing phase was next, which focused on Melissa's being reported as, quote, likely to commit acts of violence in prison, a past DWI conviction, and her perceived lack of remorse at the announcement of her verdict.
Which, again, is like, if somebody announces guilty of capital murder
in Texas, and you know what that means.
Exactly. You know that you're going to get the death penalty. And she's probably thinking, fuck, I could have taken 30 years and now I'm getting the death penalty. Like, all these things at one time are hitting her. And she's probably just completely in shock and disbelief. And they're like, see, she's not showing any remorse that she murdered her daughter.
And all of that with the fact that she maintains that she's innocent. She's not going to have remorse for killing her kid because, according to her, she didn't do it. So it's hard to have remorse for something you didn't do. She can be sad. She can be upset, and she can show that in however way she needs to or wants to, but it's hard to have remorse for something that you just didn't do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
This and justice it's like, system.
Yeah, the parole system is so heavily focused on remorse.
And there are some situations where I am glad for that.
Mm-hmm.
But that for that to work, it means everybody is 100% guilty. And that's not the world that we live in.
Right. Yeah. You have to assume that every person that comes in front of you for parole was
tried justly and they weren't.
Yes, exactly.
Or convicted justly and they weren't. Several people were called to speak during the sentencing phase, including an officer from the county jail that Melissa had been imprisoned at. The officer who reported that Melissa was checked on every 15 minutes by officers beginning on the day she was found guilty, said that she was never found to be crying or upset. So,
I mean, what's the point? You know, would it help? Which movie is that in where it's like, you know, if
any
words? The only thing I remember is, would it help? Where they're like, well, I'm not freaking out and I'm not this and I'm not that. And they're like, well, would it help? And they're like, no. And you're like, okay, well, then don't do that. Like, I don't remember, but
I don't know. I'm not.
I always think about that when, like, because I've gotten in trouble for not being worried enough about stuff at jobs that I've had, where instead of freaking out about something that went wrong, I just go into fucking fix it mode.
Well, and that's who you are as a person. I am a lot more sensitive, passionate. You know what I mean? Like, I get in the weeds a lot. I'm like, this emotion is taking over. And I cannot even put together a plan for the fix-it phase. I'm like, I have to feel this real quick, which doesn't help me. It does not help. Nothing helps. Like, to get through it is the best option, I think. But I can't get past that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But people are built differently. Like,
exactly. Like, I will shut down the emotion so that I can fix it.
You compartmentalize.
And so is it going to help for her to just sit there and cry? Probably not. So she's probably trying to figure out what her next steps are going to be. You know, like, what's it going to change if she sits there and cries or not? That doesn't change anything for her at this point.
Or maybe she's disassociating. Like, that's mm-hmm. a trauma response. Like,
absolutely. And so now we get to use that as evidence
mm-hmm.
in the sentencing phase, because there's a lot of stuff you can't really, which they brought that in to the original trial anyway. But
I mean, at this point, I feel like they would have been like, well, Melissa, when it was time to eat dinner and lunch, she ate everything on her plate, which shows that she is not remorseful and she doesn't care about what she did. Okay, let's flip that on its head. When she was brought food every time, she didn't eat any of it. Mm-hmm. Showing that she's 100% guilt. It's whatever it is.
Exactly. Yep. 100%.
One of Melissa's former neighbors also testified, and she said that when she babysat Mariah, she babysat her once, she was dropped off by Melissa and was wearing only an adult diaper with a bag of chips to eat. She recalled that Mariah had two bruises on her, but that she didn't think too much of it. She also said that she often heard running and screaming coming from their apartment, and that she once heard the sound of what she believed to have been a belt. She also described the steps at the apartment, the ones that Melissa said that Mariah had fallen down, as extremely steep and, quote, fairly dangerous. Almost there. Uh-huh. Very dangerous, but okay.
Yeah. How do you know what a belt sounds like from an apartment?
Closed doors. You're in your apartment with the door closed. They're in their apartment with the door. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Once she heard the sound of what she believed to be a belt. Like, what? You know. And Mariah wearing an adult diaper and showed up with a bag of chips to eat. I mean, there's no question that these children did not receive all the things that they needed to live an even comfortable life, you know? Like,
I mean, so, Melissa did the best that she could. Not that that's enough, but she did the best that she could. So,
yeah. I mean, and, you know, they'd been taken away from her before for mm-hmm. negligence and not having enough in the home. I mean,
right.
So we knew about that, but that doesn't make her
a murderer.
Yes.
Dr. Farley was called to the stand again, great, to reiterate her testimony about the quote-unquote bite marks. Finally, social worker Norma Villanueva and Dr. Pinkerman were actually allowed to testify, and both explained their knowledge of Melissa's past of sexual, physical, and mental abuse. Norma also spoke about Melissa's history with CPS, reporting that there were no allegations of abuse. Dr. Pinkerman said that after conducting tests on Melissa, he diagnosed her with depression and PTSD. His explanation of Melissa's demeanor during the interrogation was that she exhibited dissociation and emotional numbing due to her significant history of abuse. He also contradicted what the prosecution had asserted, saying that he believed Melissa was at a low risk of reoffending. I don't love that, because reoffending, like, it's, that implies that she has offended once before, but I guess you got to do what you got to do, because it's been according to the courts and Despite the uncertainty that seemed to still surround the case, Melissa Lucio was sentenced to death by lethal injection, and she was the first woman of Hispanic descent to be placed on death row in the state of Texas. Her date of execution was set for April 27th, 2022.
When we started researching this case and getting ready to record it, I was like, man, that name sounds so familiar. Like, I saw it on the schedule ahead of time and stuff. And then I remembered we, as a business, donate monthly to the Innocence Project, and I'm on their email list. And I remember seeing all the emails that they started sending out before this execution date. Like, hey, this is important. She's going to be, you know, executed, like, sign the petition and like all that kind of stuff. Cause I was like, man, this name sounds so familiar. So before long, Melissa's case gained national attention. The Innocence Project got involved, and even celebrities like Kim Kardashian began protesting Melissa's conviction and sentencing. There was a lot of information brought up that backed up the claim that Melissa did not receive a fair trial.
Wee wee, the secret weapon. Oh, wowee.
Okay. That Melissa didn't receive a fair trial and that she may not be guilty of murder. Petitions were filed to appeal Melissa's sentence and request a review of evidence in the case, citing unanswered questions and what many felt was just a poor investigation. And honestly, the word investigation is generous.
Mm-hmm.
They walked away from that scene and said she murdered her. She murdered that little girl.
They didn't look into anything else, any other possibilities at mm-hmm. all.
So let's discuss some of these things that were brought up. Melissa had no known history of violence against her children. One of the younger children at the advocacy center told someone that he'd seen Mariah fall down the flight of stairs 2 days before and that he saw a bruise around her eye develop. An older sister told CPS that Mariah had bruises on her face after the fall. These reports were said to not have been disclosed to the defense. Mariah had a history of falls, like we talked about, as well as a physical disability that was documented as making her prone to falls.
And now, I don't have children, but I've been around enough kids to know this. And I know that you know better than I do, and I get that. Kids fall down all the time. Oh my God, they also sneeze all the time.
Oh my gosh,
all they do is sneeze. So many sneezes. But when they're two, they can be standing up, not doing anything, and they will just fall down.
Just fall right over. Oh, yes, absolutely. Or they're never looking in front of them. They're always looking behind them. They run into everything. Or they just misjudge where stuff is. Like when both of the boys were that age, that's when they started hitting the corners of everything in our house.
I remember that. A goose egg.
The counters. Just big goose eggs on their head. They'd get those big bumps because they hit everything, the island, the countertops, like the tables that just boom right into them. Like, it's what kids do. Jesse fell down. It was his first week of summer camp this summer. And he came back in the first week, which he only went 3 days a week, with three separate new injuries where he'd fallen down. He never fell like on the grass in the playground or anything. He always tripped and fell on the concrete, like on the sidewalk or whatever. So he was scraped. Both of his knees were scraped really bad. He had a big scrape on his elbow and his arm. And it was all from just 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so yeah, they fall down all the time. Mariah's death was declared a murder by investigators before the autopsy had even taken place.
And that didn't matter anyway, though, because, but the doctor, why can't I remember her name now?
Farley.
Yes, I was like, it starts with an F. Dr. Farley was told by police before she even did the autopsy about the crime scene. And you know that either they told her flat out, this is what happened to her, or they implied it at the very least.
At the very least. Yeah, absolutely. And based on like these investigators, I'm pretty sure that, because it would have been Cruz, right, from one to the other, she felt immediately that this was a murder. And she told other people this. She told the interrogator.
Yes.
This was a severe beating. This toddler is dead because of a severe beating. I'm positive she said that to Dr. Farley, too.
Yes.
Somebody did.
So yeah. It doesn't matter.
No.
The autopsy honestly doesn't even matter at this point.
Nope. Because now everything that she is looking at
is
through the lens of murder. Oh, I think that this child was beaten. Oh, yeah. And I see right here that that could have happened from beating. And oh, I see right here that could have been from being beaten. But if they had not said anything to her, people think that they can remove bias. You can't.
Once you plant that seed, you shattered the glass. You can't put it back together.
Yeah.
You can't remove that thought from your mind.
Yeah. Unconscious bias means we don't think about it happening when it happens. Like, it just happens. So even if, like, maybe in every autopsy she goes into, if she doesn't have any prior information, then you can do this autopsy and look at something and say, okay, well, here is a laceration here. And okay, I'll note that down. And then you get the full picture. And then you say, all right, this could have been a result of X, Y, or Z, right? Like, or either or both, whatever. But if you are looking at this poor little baby's body and you've been told that she was beaten to death, then everything that you find, you're going to think, whether you mean to or not, oh yeah, I see where she was beaten here. Oh yeah, and I see that. I see that she was beaten because of this.
Bite marks. Don't even get me fucking started on bite marks. But who knows what those marks on her body. Now, I don't doubt that there was something on her body that possibly looked like it. Maybe. I don't know. But if you are automatically thinking that some individual has inflicted all of these injuries to this baby girl, doesn't it fit the narrative that she was also bitten by the mother? Because that's abusive. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, then you start to, you use the things that you find to fit the narrative. It's just, it's...
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know. I feel like we haven't talked about bite marks in a super long time, but just in case.
We would, yeah.
Bite marks are like the flames on the side of my face. Like, that's what bite marks does for me.
Yeah.
There was a study in that we saw in the Innocence Files that somebody told us about. He was the like president of the board certification group, like the regulatory board of forensic dentistry. And they sent out sample case files, you know, and they questioned, was it 100 dentists or I don't remember how many.
Yeah, I don't know.
They gave them each a certain number of photos and said, identify what are bite marks, what are animal activity, what are just what, you know, like, yeah. Less than a third of them agreed on any one of these items, what even was a bite mark. First of all, they can't even look at something and tell if it's a bite mark or not.
And this is supposed to be verified science. Like, it's just people are being put to death over this alone.
Over something that 100 of the top people in this field can't even agree on whether or not it is an actual bite mark. So then from there, then they've got to agree that, like, yes, this is a bite mark. And then, well, yeah, it matches this. Is it human or is it animal? Okay, well, it's human. Then it matches this person. Like, no, you could send the same information to all of these people and you're going to get answers all across the board. That's not science. That is replicated. Like, you cannot replicate that because nobody even knows the answer to begin with. Mm-hmm. So how has that not been deemed junk science? I don't understand.
The saddest thing is it's now getting to a place where it's frowned upon. And that's not good enough.
No.
You know, not frowned upon, you know what I mean? People are like, I don't know how much I buy.
Yeah, I just don't put as much weight in that anymore. Yeah. Yeah. It's absolutely junk science is what it is.
Yeah.
In Melissa's application for clemency, it was stated, quote, Dr. Farley, who was told going into the autopsy that Melissa had confessed to abusing Mariah and who was accompanied in the autopsy suite by two of the interrogating officers, assumed everything she observed was evidence of abuse and ignored all evidence of the contrary.
Yeah.
Melissa's extensive history as a victim of abuse wasn't allowed to be elaborated on during her trial. I did it again.
What is going on with you?
I apparently think that word is pronounced trial. A trial.
It's a trial.
Yeah. That was not allowed to be elaborated on during her trial. This information could have helped jurors to understand Melissa's demeanor during her interrogation and why she, quote, confessed. It's been claimed that due to Melissa's history, she was, quote, especially vulnerable to coercive interrogation tactics. At one point, one of the detectives even said to Melissa, "If I beat you half to death like that little child was beat, I bet you'd die too." One could take that as a threat.
Yeah.
Like
100%.
That would be terrifying. Mm-hmm. This is the same person who you said she didn't get in my face and tell me to leave her alone. Mm-hmm. Therefore, she's obviously guilty.
Okay, well, if you say...
Because an innocent person would have got up in my face.
You say something like that, what does she have to surmise is going to happen to her?
And let's talk... She's like kind of hunched over. She's not looking people directly in the eye. These are all things that usually, if you describe that kind of demeanor to somebody, a professional in these circumstances, they would probably tell you, because those are the exact things that they're supposed to look for when they respond to a domestic violence situation.
Mm-hmm.
If you're supposed to confirm whether or not domestic violence has occurred, and you've got one of the parties who's in your face, looking you directly in the eye, not cooperating with you, all that kind of stuff. And then you've got another one who's very timid and won't look at you and won't say anything and won't. Okay, well, those are things they're supposed to look for in that situation. But in this situation, those things mean that she's committed a murder, not that she has a history of abuse herself.
I also think that it's really, really interesting that her history of abuse was not allowed into court, yet the prosecution got to use all kinds of stuff, either from her past, which she has worked on and made better, or was a flat out lie. That was allowed.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah. I know. Interesting tidbits here.
Yep.
Melissa has admitted that she failed Mariah by not getting her medical care earlier. Mariah's father, who clearly did not get her medical care either, was found guilty of child endangerment and sentenced to 4 years in prison, despite his history of violent behavior.
So he could not have been the abuser. If we're going with abuse, he's not the abuser.
I wonder, and I listened to a Women in Crime episode on this case too, which I listened to a long time ago when it came out, and getting ready for this, I was like, I remember that they did an episode. I went back and listened to it. Mm-hmm. They actually interview Vanessa Potkin, maybe is her last name. She is with the Innocence Project. So she talks a little bit about that appeals process and all of that, because it can get very confusing.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I listened to their episode on it, and one of them said, well, I wonder why they didn't go after him for this being a murder. Like, why did they hone in just on Melissa? And the other one said, and I forget just which one said which, but she said, you know, I wonder if maybe Robert just wasn't in the house when it happened, that Melissa was the only one home. Maybe he was at work or he was out or something. And other people corroborated that he was not in the home when it happened. So they couldn't put the murder on him.
Okay.
And they just went after her. But I don't understand how. So hang on. How did we convict him of child endangerment because she was not given medical care after the fall that you are saying here did not occur?
Sure.
Because she was beaten to death. So are they saying that he didn't get her medical care after she was beaten severely and he knew about it? Or it's after the fall that over here didn't occur. Over here it occurred and we convicted him on that.
Mm-hmm.
But over here it didn't occur and we convicted her on that.
And also, let me be clear about this. Now, again, can't stress it enough. Gonna say it again. I am fully aware that I am not a medical professional and I don't have probably any business, but this is my opinion. I'm pretty sure that if you are an abuser and you are abusive, you can beat the holy hell out of people, resulting in death, and leave the area before they die. I think that that's possible.
Right.
How many times do you think that the perpetrator or murderer, whatever, is still at the scene of the crime when the police get there? Because it's not a lot, I'll tell you that right now.
Yes, and he's got a history of abusing these children. And he's been Well, I guess he never got arrested for it, but he was certainly reported. A principal saw him punch Melissa in the face. And you're right. Why does he have to be there? And because we know that a lot of these injuries began to occur and develop over the course of that 24 to 48 hours.
Yeah.
Like, which is possible in lots of different ways. If you hit somebody in the head with something, that can cause more problems.
And guess what?
Or if they fell down the stairs and hit their head, it can cause more problems. Like,
I can go lots of places in 24 hours. I can go and come back and go and come back.
Sure. Sure.
Like, riddle me that. It just doesn't, that.
And the fact that they convicted him of something and they sentenced him to 4 years.
And she got death.
She got death. In this one, it says that, to me, it says the fall occurred because he didn't get her the medical care after whatever it is that had happened. But over here, it was a violent beating that happened in that moment. And then apparently she immediately called the police right after she beat her because she wasn't breathing. Also, wouldn't you think that she wouldn't call the police right away if this had just all happened? Like, if she didn't want anybody to know that she had beaten this child, don't you think she would have like waited until like the next morning and been like, I don't know, she went to sleep and never woke up. Like, I don't know. But she called right away, right when they noticed she wasn't breathing.
Mm-hmm. And I love how they're putting, like, I don't know what happened with the breaking of the arm, but if it happened within the past 7 days to 2 weeks, pretty sure Robert was there for some of that, right?
Amen. He sure was. Yeah, why are we not looking at him for any of this? There is reportedly new evidence to contradict Dr. Farley's testimony that the only possible cause of Mariah's injuries was abuse. The evidence is said to support that her injuries could have been consistent with a fall that took place 2 days prior. The bite marks that Dr. Farley emphasized during her testimony have also been heavily questioned. Like we said, bite mark analysis has been largely discredited due to the inability of even trained forensic dentists to correctly identify bite marks. Yikes and a half.
Yeah.
Five of the jurors who found Melissa guilty have since come out to say that they wish they'd heard this evidence during the trial. One said, quote, the fact that you can't pinpoint what caused Mariah's death means she shouldn't be executed. Another said that if he'd heard this evidence, he might have made a different decision regarding Melissa's guilt. The jury foreperson, Melissa
Quintanille.
Quintanille?
I'm going to say
said,
that.
Said, quote, the trial left me thinking Melissa Lucia was a monster, but now I see her as a human being who was made to seem evil. Because I didn't have all the evidence I needed to make that decision. Ms. Lucio deserves a new trial and for a new jury to hear this evidence.
It's really sad.
Isn't that supposed to be one of the things that does, in fact, get you a new trial? That there is evidence that has come out that had the jury heard it, it could have changed the outcome of the trial?
You would think so. However, it happens a lot more than you think it does, and people don't get a new trial.
Yeah, so. And I guess a judge has to look at it and say they get to determine, yes, it would have or no, it wouldn't have changed the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest concerns with the possibility of Melissa's innocence is the extent of the bruising found on Mariah. Dr. Michael Laposada, the chairman of the pathology department at the University of Texas Medical Branch, determined that Mariah had evidence of DIC at the time of her death. DIC, which stands for disseminated intravascular coagulation, can be caused by multiple things, including an infection, immune reactions, and major damages to organs or tissues. So, once DIC progresses, the body becomes unable to clot, which leads to bleeding just under the skin or through the nose, mouth, or other orifices. If someone was in an advanced stage of DIC, they could bruise very easily, even with just normal, gentle contact. Dr. Laposada said that DIC can cause serious bruising without any trauma, and quote, it is not possible to tell the difference between a bruise from DIC and a bruise from abuse. Strangely enough, guys, as if all that wasn't bad enough, Strangely enough, Melissa's defense attorney, Peter Gilman, was hired into the district attorney's office shortly after Melissa's sentencing. The district attorney at the time, who pushed for the death penalty in Melissa's case, Armando Villalobos, is now serving a 13-year sentence in federal prison for bribery and extortion. He was taking bribes from like drug cartels for reduced sentences for their people.
Mm-hmm.
And all that kind of stuff. So then the integrity of every single one of the cases he prosecuted is now gone.
Well, and if you watch the Hulu documentary, I cannot exactly remember who said this. However, whoever it was that said this, they said that every case that he was responsible for convicting someone, no matter what it is, whatever the that needs to be relooked at. That needs to be reexamined.
Mm-hmm. At the very least, I think it should be retried.
Oh, 100%. But yeah.
Because if you're going to accept bribes and mm-hmm. things like that and giving criminals that you know have done something they shouldn't have done, possibly violent criminals, reduce sentences in exchange for money or not prosecuting them in exchange for money or whatever. If you're willing to do that, you don't think he's willing to commit a Brady violation and not give the defense information that they should have had before a trial?
And if it's bad enough for him get 14 years in prison, is it not bad enough? Like, follow it through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So while there are a lot of people who don't believe that Melissa is guilty, there are still those who believe that the jury made the right decision in charging her with Mariah's murder. I'll say this. I was shocked because you know how you watch any kind of a documentary, docuseries, docu whatever. And you know for damn well whoever the defendant is guilty as hell guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And then they interview his lawyer, the defense attorney, and they're like, my client is innocent. Mm-hmm. You'd hope for that, right? They interview Peter Gilman. Shockingly, they interview him. And he's like, I don't know if she's guilty or innocent. I don't know.
I couldn't believe he sat for that interview.
I couldn't either. I didn't expect it at all.
A lot that did not look good for him.
I think he was hoping for, what's the right word? It starts with a re. I cannot think of what the word is. Like, he was hoping to fix it or make himself look better or whatever. I can't think of the word. Oh,
yeah.
But I just could not believe it because, like, even the most guilty motherfuckers out there, their lawyers are like, no, he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And he sat there and said, I have no idea if she did it or not. I don't know. I'm like, and he was like, well, I don't even have my file anymore, so I have no idea about any of the details. It's like, what is the point of you?
Yeah.
Exactly. But another person who thinks that Melissa is guilty is her daughter, Selena. On her TikTok page, she has made several videos about Melissa, and she claimed that before Mariah was born and before CPS took the children away, Melissa was not physically abusive. But Selena said that in late 2006, when the children were put back into Melissa's custody, Melissa became abusive, but just towards Mariah. She said that Mariah had bruises on her matching the rings that Melissa wore, and she's made several videos about the case that can be found on her TikTok page with the handle at 5th of 14, so 5-THOF-1-4, as she was the fifth oldest child of the 14 that Melissa had.
So we'll gloss over this fairly quickly. In the Hulu documentary that we talked about, one of Melissa's older daughters, Alexandra, reportedly had told the CPS worker, Norma Villanueva, that she was responsible for Mariah falling down the stairs. Some of the other children reported that Alexandra was really mean to Mariah because they were half siblings. They didn't have the same father.
And that Mariah was scared of her.
That Mariah was scared of her. Alexandra does say that, because they talked to her. I was surprised she sat for this.
Same.
Alexandra said, I don't remember saying that to anybody, but it's in a report. So I don't know.
She did admit She was like, I didn't view her as my sister.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't close to her. I didn't view her as my sister. Mm-hmm. I didn't love her kind of thing. One of the other children also said that she witnessed Alexandra hitting Mariah's head on the ground on purpose. Melissa's sister asked Melissa when she heard this information, did Alexandra ever abuse Mariah? And she said that Melissa just put her head down and she started crying, and she's never said one way or the other, but she feels that that was an answer.
Although in the documentary, Melissa does say that she was protecting Alexandra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she does say that. So, and that's what a lot of people think, that maybe she took the fall because her daughter had done something.
Well, and apparently Peter Gilman said, I'm not going to, because Norma was like, here is this. We can use it in the defense. And he was like, no, we're not using that because I'm not going to ruin a teenager's life. At this point, Alexandra is a teenager. I'm not going to ruin a teenager's life. She has her whole life ahead of her. We're not doing that.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't believe that it actually happened, I guess then maybe that's, you know, because we have seen parents throw their children under the bus to try to save themselves. But I don't know. There are people,
witnesses that corroborate that, though. It's not just. And the thing is, too, right. Melissa never said it.
Mm-mm. Yeah. So there's a lot of people who think Melissa was trying to protect Alexandra and took the fall herself. Since all of these things, so like in 2022, Melissa's new attorneys have submitted an application for clemency. And she was scheduled to be executed in April of 2022, but the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals stayed her execution. The 138th Judicial Court of Cameron County has been ordered to consider new evidence in the case of Mariah Alvarez's death. Her attorneys are working to have sitting judge Gabriela Garcia removed from her case, as one of her staff members served as a paralegal in Melissa's original trial. That paralegal's husband is Peter Gilman, Melissa's original defense attorney, who now works for the district attorney's office.
Come on. This is literally a soap opera.
It totally is. Though she is still imprisoned, Melissa has been removed indefinitely from Texas's death row.
I honestly did not know. Now, okay. I don't love an unsolved case. I think everybody knows that at this point. And it's because of the closure. I understand how and why they are so important to talk about and to learn about. Wrongful conviction cases, they get my ass on fire. They light me up. I could talk about it for days.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to put this out there. I would be fine if she had been convicted of child endangerment, just like Robert was.
Give her the 4 years.
Yeah, and had spent the 4 years in prison.
Yeah.
Because I do believe that she should have gotten that child medical care, especially if the other kids are saying, I did see bruises develop on her face. I did see bruises develop on her body and things like that. She was extremely lethargic. She wasn't eating. Like, she's showing signs of something being wrong with her.
In 2 days.
She should have gone to the doctor. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we don't know that she beat her to death.
Well, and a capital murder, that to me says that it was premeditated. She knew what she was doing with the intent to kill. And show me where the evidence is that happened.
Yeah. And in fact, we have evidence.
Contrary.
That this poor child fell and was prone to that. Yeah. Like, but none of that was allowed in the trial. Like, that's not a fair trial.
Oh, no, not at all.
That's absolutely not a fair trial.
I don't think it's even fair to call it a trial.
Right. If she did, I'll play devil's advocate, say she did beat this child to death, she still did not receive a fair trial because all of the information that is a part of this case was not allowed in.
If we live in a world where Casey Anthony gets a fair trial and is acquitted because there's not enough evidence, this shit should never take place.
Absolutely. Amen. Amen, sister.
But that's the end of this case. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. We love you so much. And we will catch you on the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Connect with us on Instagram or Facebook to continue the conversation.
Thanks for listening, and we will meet you back here next week.
Bye.
The theme song for the show is created and composed by Stephen Toby. You can find more of Stephen's work on SoundCloud.
Our logo was created by Sloan Williams of Sophisticated Crayon. You can find more of her work on Etsy.
Visit us at killerqueenspodcast.com for merch and other info about the show.